Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the Braita I brought yesterday, which is Natar Ruvo. If the majority of the area was planted by trees, Haru B'chatzer, it remains with the status of a chatzer, and it is Mutar. Speaking about an area that is larger than a Beit Sa'atayim, that was Hukaf Lidira, so that'd be fine because when it's Hukaf Lidira, as we saw yesterday, it can be any size in terms of the span of the fences or the mechitzot that are around it. The only thing is, then he planted inside of it. And yesterday we distinguished between if he planted asavim, he planted yirakot, he planted vegetation or grains, which would then impact on the dira aspects of the chatzer or the karpef, and therefore it would ruin it in terms of its being hukaf ledira. On the other hand, the Braita said that if it was trees that were planted there, they would not undermine that it is a mukaf ledira, because people plant trees in their yards, around their houses, they utilize the fields or the chatzer in that way, even when there are trees in it. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yimei, Behusha Asuin, Itztablaot. That's only if the trees are set up, the actual word means horse stables, but it means that it's set up in rows, or in an organized fashion, meaning that the trees aren't haphazardly planted all over the place, or they're not planted in a way that makes it difficult to use the area of the chatzer. They're planted in some sort of semblance of order and rows so that you can still walk down the paths, you can work in between them. The chatzer is still functional as a chatzer. Rav Nachman Amar, Afo Pisha Inasuin Itztablaot. Nachman says you don't have to have that qualification. Even if the trees are planted all over the place or haphazardly, it still has utilization that is good for Dira. It still functions as a chatzer, and therefore it retains its shame of Hukaf Lidira. So Mar Yehuda, Ikla Lebei Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. So Mar Yehuda went to visit the house, the Beit Midrash, Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. Chazon Dahanu, Delo Avide Itztablaot. He saw that the area was Hukaf Lidira, but the trees were not planted in an orderly fashion. And they were still carrying around inside of this karpef that was larger than Beit Sa'atayim, but it was Hukaf Lidira. So you could carry around, but now there are trees planted there, but the trees are not planted in an orderly fashion. So Rav Yehuda says to, seemingly, Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, don't you guys subscribe to the statement of Avime that you need to have it planted in an orderly fashion in order to be considered or classified as Hukaf Lidira? I hold like Rav Nachman, who disagreed with that statement of Avime, because Rav Nachman said that even if they're not planted in an orderly fashion, does not undermine the sense of Hukaf Lidira, or that it is a chatzer. Amar Shmuel, Karpef Yoter Mi Beit Sa'atayim, Shelo Hukaf Lidira. If you have a karpef that's greater than a Beit Sa'atayim, that was not encircled or fenced in or had mechitzot placed around it for dira, for living space, so it would be asur to carry in that area. It would be classified as a karmelit. Ketzat hu oseh. How do you rectify that? What is the way to change it from shelo hukaf ledira, where it was fenced in, not for the purposes of a living space or for dira, which makes it problematic in terms of carrying, but now you want to convert it into an area that is ledira. Now the problem is that the dira has to be there first, and then afterwards you have to fence it in or put up the mechitzot. And that way the mechitzot are put up with the intent of dira. Here the mechitzot are already standing. Since the mechitzot are standing, you can't put up mechitzot to make it hukaf ledira. So how do I convert it from being something that's hukaf shelo ledira to something that's hukaf ledira? So the suggestion is, poreitzbo pirtza yoter miyaser, you can create a breach in the fencing that is greater than 10 amot, vigodro, and then you refence it, umamido eleser, and you reduce the gap or the opening back to 10 amot, umutar, and then it would be fine. So what the suggestion here is that you break the mechitzot to the point where they're no longer halachically sound, efficacious mechitzot. Remember that we've said before that if you have a gap that is 10 amot wide, we just consider that to be a petach, a door or an opening in the fence. Once it exceeds 10 amot, then it already becomes problematic. And that can only be solved possibly with a tzurat the petach, or according to Rav, it can't even be solved with tzurat the petach. So if you just breached a small width of the wall, you haven't done anything halachically significant because the fence or the mechitzot are still intact halachically. Even if you break it up to 10 amot, you still haven't done anything halachically because that just becomes like a petach. It doesn't ruin the mechitzot. So what Shmuel says, in order to do something of significance, you need to ruin the mechitzot halachically. The only way to do that is to breach the fence at a width that is greater than 10 amot. Once you've done that, now the mechitzot are no longer halachically valid mechitzot, and it's as if there are no mechitzot over here. In the interim, you put in the dira, or you open up a doorway of some house that's adjacent to this area, into the area, so you make it now that it's dira ready, and then you have to be hukaf. Now you need to close it up. So all you need to do now is close up that breach that is more than 10 amot and reduce it to below 10 amot. You don't need to reseal the whole thing because halakhically, once you get it below 10 amot, it's a good mechitza. So if you want to reseal the whole thing, that'd be fine too. But all you have to do halakhically is take it from above 10 amot to 10 amot, and then it would be fine because now you've created mechitzot that are efficacious halakhically, and that is as if the dira was there first, and now it's hukaf l'dira. So that's how you would solve this problem or rectify it, change it from being something that was hukaf shelo l'dira to something that's hukaf l'dira. And even though it's greater than Beit Satayim, it'll be fine to carry here because it's hukaf l'dira. So now the Gemara poses a question. It's not clear who's asking the question. Paratzama begadarama. If he breaches the wall by an ama wide, and then he fixes it, he refences it in that ama. Uparatzama begadra. And then he does a similar thing right next to it and does another ama, and then he fixes it. Achishlimu liyoter miyaser. Until the point where the breach is greater than 10, but at no point in time was there an opening that was greater than 10. Mahu. What is the din over here? So the question is, do you have to have something whereby the mechitza is open greater than 10 amot at a given moment, and therefore is now breached, and therefore the walls halakhically have been destroyed, and then you have to seal it up in order to make it that they now take on a new status of halakhic walls? Or, in our instance over here, you're breaking it down piecemeal, and then rebuilding it each time before it reaches the full 10 amot. By the time you're finished, you've now breached the wall in greater than 10 amot, but at no point in time was there an opening that was greater than 10 amot. At no point in time it seems here that was there an opening that was greater than amah. Although the Sfat Emet points out that it doesn't literally have to be amah. It could be something where you did 9 amot, you fixed it, and then you do another 2 amot, so now in totality they're greater than 10. There's 11 amot that were breached, but at no point in time were they open more than 10. How do we look at this fix that you have done? Do we say that each time you fixed it, wall never lost its halachic status? And since it never left its halachic status, you haven't changed the original mechitzot that were there, and now it's on a new mechitza that is mukaf l'dira. Or do we say that yes, incrementally, each time that you do it, you didn't do anything significant, but in totality, you have done something that is significant, that will then have the meaning halachically as if you have breached the wall for the entire area that's greater than 10 amot, and then sealed it up. And this is a new mechitza, and it would be classified as mukaf l'dira. So in order to get an imahu, what's the din here? So amarle, it's not clear here who's speaking, because it was never clear who asked the question. Lav haynu d'tnan. Isn't this similar to the Mishnah that we saw in Kelim, which is kol klei balei abatim? All utensils of balei abatim, these are speaking about wood utensils. As Rashi notes over here, and many other places in Shas, Rashi and Tosafot note that this comes from the section of Masechet Kelim, where it's speaking about Kli Eitz. There is one place where Rashi seems to indicate it's speaking about Kli Cheres, and Tosafot criticizes him and says it's only speaking about Kli Eitz. Shi'uran kirimonim. The shi'ur for them to be not considered kelim anymore is if it has a hole in it the size of a rimon, a pomegranate. There the Mishnah also seems to indicate it has to be a cluster of three rimonim together where it's a little harder for it to exit. The holes that are of a smaller size, the balabayit will repurpose the kli to use for something that's bigger. So if it has a hole the size of a zayit, the size of an olive, he'll repurpose it to use it for figs or dates. And if it has a hole the size of dates or figs, then he'll repurpose it to use it for apples. And then after he repurposes it for apples, it gets a hole the size of an apple, he'll repurpose it for rimonim. Rimonim being one of the larger fruits that one would store in such a keli. Once you reach that threshold already, we consider that it's no longer a kli. It's lost its shame kli. And once it lost its shame kli, it's not mikabel tuma. And also the tuma that was on it would also then dissipate because it's no longer a kli. Ubayi chizkiyah. And Chizkiyah, when he was learning this Mishnah, said, Nikev kemotzi zayit. What happens if there was a hole the size of an olive? Vistamo. And then he sealed it up. V'chazar v'nikev kemotzi zayit. And adjacent to there, another hole opened up that was the size of an olive. Ustamo. And then he sealed it up. Achi shlimo lemotzi rimon. Till the point where the small holes that were made, each incrementally and then sealed up, in totality, they equal now a hole that is the size of a rimon. Now, there's no hole in the kli because he sealed it up each time. But the patch that you have there is greater than the size of a rimon. Mao, what does that mean for the kli? Vamarle Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says to his Rabbi Chizkiyah, Rabbi, shenita lanu. Didn't you teach us about this other Mishnah in Kelim, which is sandal shenifsaka achat mi'oznav? If you have a sandal, which one of its ears, its tabs, or its straps was torn off, The way the sandal works is that you have a band in the front that holds it over the front of the foot. And then you have ears that come up the side by the ankles that have a string in it. And then you tie those together to hold it onto the leg itself. So then if one of those oznayim, one of those ears that are towards the heel of the sandal that help affix it to the foot or the leg of the individual, if one of those tears away, v'tikna, and you fix it, tamei midras. The sandal remains tamei midras. Now, tamei midras is tumah that is conveyed through the bearing of weight. Certain tumot are of such high level, like that, tumat azav, tumat azava, tumat anida, where they're able to convey their tumah, even though they haven't touched the item, even though they aren't carrying the item, even though they haven't moved the item, but simply having the item be under them. Whether it's they were sitting on the item, they were laying on the item, or they were standing on the item. And even if they're not in direct contact with it, the fact that the item bears their weight, that's enough to make it that it is tamei, tumat midras, which is a high level of tumah. It is an avatumah. So over here, if the Zav wore these sandals, whether he came to direct contact or not is not important right now, but he wore these sandals, and by wearing those sandals, he made the sandals into tamei tumat midras. Now, if you lose one of those ears that affix it to the leg, it still remains tamei tumat midras because the sandal is still functional, even if it only has one ear on it. On the other hand, after you fix that first ozen that fell off, that first ear or strap that fell off, nifsaka shniya, the second one, the one on the other side, then tore, vitigna, and then you fix that as well, tahor mina midras. At this point, it no longer has tumat midras, avatame maga midras, but it does have tuma of it being in contact with something that had tumat midras. We'll explain all this in a second. Vamartala, and you said to us, when the first one tore off, the reason that the sandal still maintained its shame of a sandal and was tamei tumat midras was because the second one was still intact at that point in time. Shnia, when the second one tears here, namia kaima rishona or kamatakna rishona. The first one is there because you fixed it after it tore and it's still there. So why in the first case does it retain its tumat midras? Because you say that one ozen is enough to have it maintain its utility as a sandal, and therefore nothing has changed here, and it remains tamei tumat midras. Yet, when the second one tears, even though the first one's been fixed and is still there, now you say all of a sudden the tumat midras disappears. And you explain to us the reason for that is, panim chadoshot ba'ulikan. That is because you have a new face over here. Yes, you've patched up the sandal. You fixed the ear that tore off. And now you fix the second ear that tore off. But in totality, the original sandal no longer exists as the kli, because the ozen that was torn at first has been replaced or stitched on, and that's a new kli. Once the second ozen tears, and now you replace that, you have two oznayim that came from new material or from a new kli or a new part of the kli. They are replacement parts for the sandal. And so the original sandal standalone doesn't have enough in it to be considered or classified as a sandal anymore because it lost both of its oznayim. The two oznayim that you added on are new items here. And since the Zav has not worn the sandal since they were torn off, then it doesn't have tumat midras. And now let's apply the same thing here with regards to the rimonim. Achanami, chadnim chadashot ba'udekan. So too by the kli bala bayit has a hole in it that on an incremental basis cumulatively adds up to a size of a rimon. That also will make it that the kli is no longer the original kli. And so there will be no longer any tumah that exists in the kli because it has a hole the size of rimon that makes it that it's not the original kli. And even though it's patched up, we still will say that it's panim chadasho badukan. What's patched up is as if there's a new kli that's made there. So now, mikana laba, if you continue to use the kli, prospectively, you could have it be mikabel tumah, because it's a new kli. But the tumah that existed before is no longer here because that kli has disappeared in the sense of its original state. The new items or the new patching is a new addition to the kli, and it makes it into as if it has a new face. Kariale. Chizkiah says about his Talmud Rabbi Yochanan, late Dain Barinish. This person is not human, meaning that he's like an angel, he's like a malach. And this was an unbelievable connection between these two items, or an extrapolation of the din by the sandal to that of the klelim by the rimon. Or he could amri that he said, Kigon Dain Barnash. Someone like this is a real man. He's someone who's really chashuv. Chizkiah again is complimenting his Talmud Rabbi Yochanan. And obviously the Gemara is extrapolating that and saying the same thing by us, by Eruvin, which is that by the Mechitza, you have a Mechitza now that on an incremental basis, you've reached cumulatively a new fence that is more than 10 amot long. And that means that panim chadosho balvikan. So it's as if there's a new halachic mechitza here. And since that new halachic mechitza was created after it was opened to dira, now it's as if the mechitza was hukaf le dira, because you have a significant portion of the fence that was replaced after it became ra'ui l'dira. That is how we get from the question Eruvin to the question by the Motzi Rimon in the Klei Balei Batim. That brings us to the story of the sandal. And from the story of the sandal and the Rimon, we learn that Panim Chadashot is significant halachically, and it makes as if there's a new Klei here. So too by us, the breach of the wall, even though it's fixed incrementally each time, since in cumulative basis is now greater than what would be halachically significant, that's enough to be classified as Panim Chadashot or a new Mechitza over here. Now just to delve into a little deeper with the case of the sandal, over here it's very hard to understand what is happening. The ozen of the sandal fell off in the first place, and the sandal is still functional. Since it's still functional, the tumat midras remains on the sandal, and it doesn't lose its tumah. If the second ozen falls off, we already say that it's no longer functional as a sandal. Since it's not functional as a sandal, it no longer has tumat midras because it's lost its shame kli, or the original kli that was there. So because of that, it is no longer tameh tumat midras. The additional nuance that's added by the Mishnah and Kelim is that even if you fix it in the interim, that doesn't change anything. Even if you fix one ozen before the second one falls off, and then you fix the second one, even though it's still functional as a sandal here, the original kli is not functional as a sandal, the new one is functional as a sandal. That by itself is pretty straightforward. The nuance in that Mishnah, which is very difficult, is that the Mishnah says that even though it's not tameh tumat midras, even though it's not tameh from the original stepping of the zav into the sandal, because you have a new kli here, it still has tumat maga midras, as if it touched a kli that was tameh tumat midras. Tumat midras is an ava tumah, that's the highest level of tumah, and it can convey tumah to individuals, to kelim, food, and drinks as well. But if it's tameh maga midras, that's a rishon the tumah, it's one level down. It's as if it touched the ava tumah and became a rishon the tumah. A rishon the tumah can affect ochlim u'mashkim, but it can't affect human beings, it can't affect the kelim, at least at a doraita level. So now the question is, how did it go from being tamei tumat midras into maga midras? So Rashi makes a suggestion over here that even though the sandal is no longer functional as a sandal after the two oznayim fall off, even if they are replaced, nevertheless, it still has a shame kli to it. It's still functional. And since it's still functional, it has a shame kli, and it maintains the status of tumat maga midras. And as Tosfot points out, according to Rashi, you don't need to fix the first ozen in order for the kli to have tumat maga midras, because all you need is it for it to maintain its status as a kli. And when you don't put on the first strap, then when the second strap breaks, it's no longer a sandal, but it still has a shame kli. So you would be indifferent as to whether you fixed or didn't fix the first ozen or tab or strap. And Rashi himself points out the only reason that the Mishnah mentions it is because it's a chiddush, that even though you fixed the strap, when the second strap falls off, we still say panim chadashot bolikan, and the tumat midras dissipates. But then Rashi explains the way that the tumat was conveyed is that when the strap was broken away from the sandal, it got tumah from the sandal itself. And the second strap, when it detaches away from the sandal, becomes tamei tumat maga midras. So that's the way Rashi explains it over here. Tosfot already points out that Rashi's explanation is very difficult. First of all, if you say that the reason that it has tumah over here, tumat maga midras, is because it retains its shame kli, then it shouldn't matter whether you re-affixed the straps or whether you haven't re-affixed the straps. Rashi is saying that even if both straps are taken off, it still has a shame kli. And since it has a shame kli, the tumat maga midras persists, even though the tumat midras itself has gone away, because it's functional not as a sandal anymore, but as some other item, some other kli. And therefore, it is a kli, but it's not a kli the midras. And therefore, it's only tamei tumat maga midras. So Tosfot says, then why do you need to fix the strap for this to be true? Even if you didn't fix the strap before the second strap fell off, it still would have tamei tumat maga midras, according to Rashi. And Tosfot says, the Mishnah in Kelim says that's not the case. The Mishnah in Kelim specifically says that the first strap is fixed before the second strap falls off, and then only then, if the second strap falls off, does it have tumat maga midras. Rashi in the Gemara and Shabbat retracted this position and said that it's not true that after the straps fall off, the reason that it's tumat maga midras is because it's still functional as a kli, Rather, he writes that it's still functional as the original kli, meaning that it's still functional as a sandal because you put the straps back on. And since you put the straps back on, it's a new sandal. It may not be the original sandal, but it is a new sandal. Since it's a sandal, it can retain the tumat maga midras, even though it doesn't maintain the tumat midras. But then again, we're still back to how was the tumah conveyed? How did the tumah go from the old sandal to the new sandal? So Tosafot makes one possible suggestion, which is, at the time the Zav put his foot into the sandal, he also touched the sandal. He put his foot in, which made it into tumat midras, because it was supporting his foot, and there was nothing between him and the sandal. That means that he came into direct contact with the sandal, and therefore it's tumat maga as well, because he's in direct contact with the Zav, who's an avatumah, that makes it into a Rishon Letumah. So let us say that maybe you can't have Tumat Maga that comes after Tumat Midras. Midras is a very high level Tumah. And we have a question, the Gemara other places, once something has a high level of Tumah, can it then accept a lower level of Tumah, which is not meaningful now, but might be meaningful in the future? And that the Gemara leaves as a question. But over here, we would say, since it happened Bevat Achad, it happened simultaneously, where he put his foot in, Tumat Midras and Tumat Maga took place simultaneously, and they both devolved upon the Kli simultaneously. And then when one of them disappears, the other one is manifest. So when the Tumat Midras disappears, the Tumat Maga Midras would appear. That'd be a great answer, except for the fact that Tosafot says, just like there are Panim Chadashot here for the Tumat Midras, there's also Panim Chadashot here for the Tumat Maga Midras. And if that's the case, you have a new Kli. As Rashi is now saying in his amended form, it was a sandal, and now it's a sandal, but it's a new sandal. It's a new sandal. It's a new sandal not only for Tumat Midras, it's also a new sandal for Tumat Maga Midras. So the Ritzbah makes a suggestion here in Tosafot that Panim Chadashot has impact on Midras, does not have impact on Maga Midras. And that is because the sandal loses its status as a sandal once enough pieces have fallen off of it. It's no longer Ra'ui, the Midras, from its original form. And there's no guarantee that you're going to fix it and make it into a sandal again. And therefore, is if there is a new kli here, and that's why it's Panim Chadashot. On the other hand, in order for it to have Maga Midras, all it has to be is a kli, any form of kli. And what the Ritzbah suggests is that a person always has in mind to repurpose these types of items. Even if he doesn't use it as a sandal, he uses it as some sort of kli. And since that's always the intent, then we always believe that there's a shame kli left on it, and Panim Chadashot doesn't have any influence over here. As opposed to Tumat Midras, where there is Panim Chadashot, because B'teila Yidato Etzol Kol Adam, and most people don't repurpose it to be a sandal again, after it's both of its Oznaim have torn away. So then Tosafot brings the suggestion that Rashi says over here, that it's the Ozen, when its strap separated away from the main sandal, that's when it became Tumat Maga Midras. And it's a reference to the strap that has this Tumat Maga Midras. Tosafot says that that doesn't work either, because the Gemara says in other places, in order to convey Tuma from Midras to Maga Midras, it still has to have a significant piece. And since the sandal has lost its standing as having Tumat Midras, there's nothing left that can then convey the Tuma to the Ozen as it's separating it away from the main item. So that can't be the explanation. Rashi, in the Gemara in Shabbat, makes a suggestion that it touched itself. The sandal touched itself, and therefore it is Tumat Maga Midras because it touched itself. You can't say that because the sandal's already Tumat Midras because of the principle of Savala Tuma, which is that when you have a higher level Tuma, it's not clear that you can then accept a lower level Tuma to have future ramification. The Tosafot in Shabbat brings in the Rebbe Shimon that you don't say Savala Tuma where the Tuma emanates from itself. But that still requires you to believe that Tumat Beit HaSterim would work over here. Tosafot says that would be a great solution according to Rabbi Meir, who thinks that Tumat Beit HaSterim works. That when you touch something in an area that's not visible, that's considered touching. But according to the mainstream view and the way we pass in Halacha, that Tumat Beit HaSterim, when you have a connection that is not visible, you can't pass Tuma through that connection, then the item touching itself is Tumat Beit HaSterim, and the Tuma cannot be conveyed in that way. He says, don't suggest that when they were fixing the first strap, as you began to stitch on the first strap, it became Tamei Tumat Midras, because now it's connected to the main sandal, which is Tamei Tumat Midras, and that now affects the strap and makes it into Tamei Tumat Midras because it's attached. And then when you stitch the second half of the strap on, then the strap itself, which is Tamei Tumat Midras, affects the sandal through Maga Midras. You can't say that because the sandal's already Tamei Midras. And it can't accept Maga Midras, which is a lower level of Tuma, Elaim Kane, you answer the question that the Gemara poses in Menachot as to whether lower level Tumah can impact on something that has higher level Tumah for future ramifications. So Tosafot in the end makes the suggestion that when the Zav originally stood on the sandal, he conveyed to the sandal Tumat Midras, because he's standing on it, it's bearing his weight, even if he's not directly in contact with it. But he was also directly in contact with it, which gave it Tumat Magav Midras. They happened simultaneously. So both of them are manifest in the sandal. Eventually, the sandal is going to have panim chadashot baldekan, and that will erase both forms of tumah. But in the interim, he lost one of the straps. It ripped off, and he replaced it with a new strap. The new strap that he put on now comes into contact with the main sandal. The main sandal has two forms of tumah. It has a form of tumat midras, and it has a form of magam midras. Both of those tumot are now conveyed or passed on to the strap that now becomes a part of the sandal. The replacement strap now gains both of those tumot, and they are both manifest in the strap because either the magam midras happened first before they were actually attached and then the tumat midras came, or because they were conveyed simultaneously. They're coming from, conveyed from the sandal to the strap simultaneously. Then when the second strap breaks off, and now the original sandal doesn't exist anymore, and the original sandal doesn't exist, then for the sandal itself, the Tumat Midras goes away because you have Panim Chadashot, and so does the Magam Midras, which happened at the same time, goes away because you have a new Kli here. But the strap that was now affixed onto it after they tore the first time and you have the new strap there, that strap is still here and still on the sandal. That strap can convey the tumah that it has embedded in it. Now, tumat midras is gone because that strap in itself doesn't have tumat midras. It was only tameh, tumat midras, because it was attached to the sandal that was midras. And since they're one entity, they had tumat midras together. But now that the tumat midras of the sandal is gone, because the panim chadashot here, then the tumat midras is also gone from the strap. But it still has the tumat magam midras in it that it got from the original sandal. And that will be then attached to the sandal, and they will share that tumah. And that's why the sandal now has tumat magam midras, because it's attached to the strap that he replaced the first time, which became Tameh, Tumat Midras, and Magam Midras from the original sandal. But now that the original sandal is no longer intact there, the Tumat Midras has disappeared, but the Magam Midras, which is embedded in the strap, can then be reconveyed to the sandal because they are part and parcel of each other. They're one entity. So even though the strap is a minority of the sandal, since they're one entity, and that Magam Midras can then affect the sandal, make it Tameh, Tumat Magam Midras. Right now we continue in the Gemara. Amar Rav Kahana, Rechava Shachrei Batim. If you have a backyard that is behind the houses, Ein Mitalteilin Bo Ela Dalet Amot. There you can only carry 4 amot, meaning that it is a karmelit. So the assumptions have to be here. First of all, that it was mukaf shelo l'dira. It was encircled not l'dira. There's no opening from the house into this backyard. Number two is that it's greater than Beit Satayim. So since it's greater than Beit Satayim, shelo mukaf l'dira, as a din of a karmelit, then you can't carry more than dalet amot in it. Bama Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says now, im patach lo petach, if you now open up a door from the house into this backyard, mutar l'teltel bikulo, now you can carry in the whole area of the rechava, because now it becomes an area that is hukaf l'dira. Petach matiro, because the petach makes it roi l'dira, and that is matir it now to be even over a Beit Satayim, because it has mechitzot around it, and you can carry in it. Now, the Gemara qualifies that based on what we've seen already, which is, v'lo amran, ela shepatach uber l'sof hukaf. That's only true if he opened the door first, and then he put up the mechitzot. Aval hukaf uber l'sof patach, lo. But if the mechitzot were already up for the rechava, and then you open the door into the rechava, it doesn't work. And the Gemara says, patach uber l'sof hukaf, pshita. Why do we need Rav Nachman to teach us this din, that if you open up a doorway, and then afterwards the fencing's put up, then it's considered to be a hukaf l'dira. That's your classic case of hukaf l'dira. And that seems to be what Rav Nachman's teaching us in this din. So it's asking it on the first part of this statement of the Gemara, which is that patach l'sof hukaf, that's a chiddush that Rav Nachman's teaching us. The second half of the statement is still a chiddush, which is that if it was hukaf, it was already at the wall, and then the petach was brought in, that's a chiddush that doesn't work, because of the fact that later on we have Amoraim that disagree. So that part the Gemara is not challenging. The Gemara is challenging the first part of the statement, which seems to be what Rav Nachman is teaching us over here, which is that if you have something that is patach, and then afterwards you are mekifit, that it's considered to be ukaf l'dira. Rav says, lo, tzricha, it's an unusual case. Ditbe beidari. It's a case where there is already a threshing area in the rechava, in the backyard. Maudatema, what I would think now is when he opens up the door from the house to that area, Adaita de Beidari Avde. The other girsa is Adaita de Beidari Potach. He is opening it up in order to utilize the threshing floor, make it easier for him to access the threshing area. He's not opening it up to make it into an Adira area, but rather he's focused on the threshing floor or the threshing area or the storage of grain that exists there already. And that's why he's opening up the door. And therefore, now if he goes up and puts up a fence, we're not going to say it's Ukaf L'dira. Because we don't think that he opened the door for Dira. We think he opened it up for the utilization of that which was there already. Kamash Malan, that despite the fact that there was a Bay Dari there, it doesn't change the fact that now it's going to be Ukaf L'dira. So that's according to the Girsa, that it's a Daita Bay Dari Potach, that he's opening up the door for the intent to get access to the Thregorin area. And that's why we would have thought that it's not now a Petach L'dira. And when you hukaf, it's not hukaf the dira. Or if you don't have the word petach there, but a daita beidari avde means that he's putting up the fence because of the threshing area that's there. And since he's putting it up with something that already exists, he's not focused on the petach, on the dira, he's focused on the threshing area. So kamash malan, that we don't say that, and we say that he's focused on the doorway and the dira, and it's not nulled by the fact that there was already a gorin that existed over there, and when you're makifit, it's a hukaf the dira. Karpef Yotermi Beit Sataim. If you have this area that is encircled that is more than Beit Sataim, Shukaf Ladira, but it was fenced in or had Mechitzo put up for living purposes. There was a house there, there was utilization that had openings that allowed people to access it, and therefore it's totally fine to carry in it because it was Hukaf Ladira. Hukaf Ladira can even be greater than a Beit Sataim. Vinitpale Mayim. Then it was flooded. Meaning that water came into the area of the Karpef, and it flooded it. So Ravur Rabbanon Lemeimar, Kizraim Damu. The Rabbanon thought that this is similar to what we saw in the Braita of the Izraim. The Izraim over there ruined the Dira aspect of it, and so too the water ruins the Dira aspect of it. And just like when the Izraim were there, they ruined the Dira and made it into a place that's a sewer to carry, so too over here, the water that comes in is going to make it, even though it's Hukaf the Dira, and there's still a part of it that is still functional as a Dira, the water is going to ruin it sufficiently that it's no longer hukaf l'dira. And then it would be subject to all the rules that we saw before with regards to Zraim, whether it was the rove, or even if it was the minority of the area, but it was greater than Beit Sataim, all of those would be influential over whether it would be mutar or not mutar to carry around in the area. So that's what the Rabbanan thought. Amar lehu, Rav Ava Achua, the brother of Rav Abrei, the Rav Masharshia, this is what we have in the name of Rova. Mayim kinitayim damu vishari. That water is not like planting vegetation and grains, but it's like planting trees, and it is mutar. And the reason being is because they have utilization l'dira. Water is a very important part of dira, and actually enhances the dira of the area, and therefore it's like the trees that enhance the chatzer. So do the water enhances the Chatzer or the Karpef that you have surrounded here, the Dira. Amar Meimar, Meimar qualifies that and says, "Vuhu dechazian l'tashmishta." That's only true if it's potable water. If it's drinkable water, then that enhances the Dira. And by enhancing the Dira, it becomes mashimukaf the Dira. And that's like Rashi on the Mishnah who said that the Pasei Biraot is mukaf the Dira because that's potable water. That's water that's drinkable. Unlike many of the other Rishonim who believe that by Pasei Biraot, it's not classified as hukaf l'dira. Rashi, leveraging what we're saying here, says that that is hukaf l'dira. But if it's not potable water, even though you can use it to water the fields or you can give it to the animals to drink, lo, that does not enhance the dira that you're living in, because hukaf l'dira means livable space, and space that's useful to you in that livable mode. Amravashi, udechazian l'tashmishta nami lo amran. And even if it is potable water, we only say that elishain ba'umko yotermi beit sa'atayim. If in its depth, it doesn't expand over an area of beit sa'atayim. Avam yesh ba'umko, if in its depth, it spans over yotermi beit sa'atayim, asur, then it'll be problematic. So as Rashi and Tosafot both explain over here, umko, or standard depth, is 10 tfachim. So if it is less than 10 tfachim, it's considered to be a puddle, and therefore it does not interfere with your ability to have that area be an area of dira. But if it is deeper than 10 tfachim, that inhibits your ability to utilize it, lemakom dira, because of its depth. And then if that depth spans over an area of Beit Satayim, it now becomes significant, similar to the Zra'im, that if they already span over a Beit Satayim, they become problematic because you have an area that is significant that is not Lidzira anymore. And similarly over here, you have something that's deep, 10 tefachim, that's spanning over a large area of Beit Satayim, it becomes Chashuv, and it ruins the Dira. As Tosfos points out, this is following the third way we explained the Gemara before with Zra'im, which is this according to Rabbi Shimon. So therefore, if it's at Beit Satayim, it's okay, because then it'll be a Hukaf Shalol Dira of Beit Satayim, which is fine. And the other part will be a Chatzer, which is Hukaf Ledira, which is also fine. And according to Rabbi Shimon, a Chatzer and a Karpif have the same din, and you can carry between them, and it's not a problem. Only when you exceed Beit Satayim is it a problem. That's the view of Rabbi Shimon, as opposed to the view of the Rabbanan, that even at a Beit Satayim, it's already problematic, because they believe that a Chatzer and a Karpif are two different Rishiyot, and you can't carry between them, as we saw at the end of yesterday's daf on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. And then that leads Tosafot to say the same qualification we said before, which is that when the Zra'im were the rove of the area, everybody agreed that the whole area was Asur because the Miut was Batel to it. And similarly over here, entire Yotermi Beit Satayim does not have to have the depth of 10 Tefachim, but even if just the rove has the depth of 10 Tefachim, the Miut is Batel to the rove, and in that case, it's the equivalent of having an area that is Yotermi Beit Satayim that is 10 tefachim deep. And then that would become a karmelit. And that's because an area of that depth, that is that big, is not a normal way to store water. People don't have ditches of water of that depth, of that size, of greater than a Beit Satayim. And therefore, it's no longer considered to be hukaf ledira. The Reed disagrees with that and says that it has to be that the entire Beit Satayim is deep 10 tefachim. If only a majority of it is deep 10 tefachim, does that annul or override the remainder of the Yotermi Beit Satayim that is less than 10 tefachim deep? Because it's similar to a bor in that case, which is a cistern that stores water. And this is a normal way to store water. Even though there's depth in parts of it, and there's shallow areas in other parts, all of that is normal. Until you cross over the threshold of Yotermi Beit Satayim, that's all considered to be normal for Dira. And therefore we don't say that the rove annuls or overrides the miut, and it's similar to trees that are planted there and not Zra'im. Now, even though by a bor, we say that a bor can be any size, even greater than Beit Satayim, if you're telling me that this ditch and these areas of water are like a bor, why can't they exceed Beit Satayim? So the Reed makes a suggestion that there's a difference between a bor, which has proper mechitzot, that's something that we don't mind, or is still considered hukaf ledira, even when it's greater than a Beit Satayim. But these types of ditches, which are more like private reservoirs, people don't usually have those be greater than a Beit Satayim, and if it is greater than that, it loses its shame, hukaf ledira, turns into be like Zra'im, and no longer like a Netiat Eitzim, and therefore it loses its shame, dira. So the Reed disagrees with the Balei Tosafot that a robe of being deep, 10 tefachim of Yotermi Beit Satayim is enough to ruin the area. He believes that the entire thing has to be deep, 10 tefachim in Yotermi Beit Satayim in order for it to ruin the Hukaf Ledira. And the Gemara says, V'lav Milti, the Gemara doesn't agree with this assumption that if it's deep water, that it's problematic. Similar to a pile of fruits, which Rashi gives two possibilities as to what it means here. Either it means piles of fruits that are very high. They're more than 10 tefachim high. And if you have piles of fruits that are more than 10 tefachim high that span over an area that is a Beit Kor, we'd still say that that area is hukaf ledira. And it does not ruin the hukaf ledira. So through the water that's potable, even if it's deeper than 10 tefachim, has that same status as the fruits, and therefore it does not ruin the hukaf ledira, because we just view it as a very large reservoir. Or, Rashi brings a second interpretation, that it is a ditch that is deep, 10 tefachim, that you store peirot in it. And even though it's very deep, we don't say that it ruins the hukaf ledira, no matter how big it is. And similarly, if you have a socha that is deep, that has lots of water in it, it would not ruin the hukaf ledira, because that's the normal way to store things in these deep ditches, or in these big piles, and they are enhancing of the dira, and they don't ruin the hukaf ledira. Now the Gemara brings a different case, a rechava. You have a backyard, Davi b'pumnara, which is in this location called Pumnara, t'chad gisava patiach lemata. On one side of it, it was opened into the city, meaning that there was a mavoi, this square area that was a rechava, and from there, there was a pathway, a mavoi, that led out into the Rishut Rabim on one side. T'chad gisava patiach l'shvil shel kramim. L'shvil shel kramim habi salik the good of the nara. And on the other side, it had a path through the vineyards that reached the banks of the river. Amar Abaye, Hey Chinavid, what can we do here to solve the problem? The problem is that they want to use this Rechava. The Rechava is greater than Beit Satayim, an area Shehukaf, Shalola Dira, and it's a sword to carry on Shabbat. The problem is you have a Mavoi on one side of it, and a Shvil Shel Kramim on the other side. Both of those are rendered useless on Shabbat, you can't use them on Shabbat, because they were Poreitz Bimlo'o. They have an opening that's totally open into a Carmelite, an area that is a sword to use on Shabbat. And also another detail about this is that this pathway where you came through the Mavoi, then went through the Rechava, that square area, and then back into another pathway, the Shvil HaKarim that led to the river, was a thoroughfare for the camels or animals of the city to go get water. And therefore people used to bring their camels or animals through that Mavoi, through the Rechava, all the way down the Shvil HaKarim to the river to drink. So now we want to make it so that the people can use the Mavoi, the Shvil Shel Kramim, and the Rechava on Shabbat. How do we solve that problem? Now, we technically could solve the problem of the Mavoi by putting up a Tzuret HaPetach on one side and a Lechi on the other side. But that still wouldn't let you utilize the Rechava. And similarly on the other side, the Shvil Shel Kramim, the way that Rashi learns over here, that the Shvil Shel Kramim also has houses and Chatzerot around it, and there are people that live in that area, so it has the same din as a Mavoi. Once again there, you could have solved the problem by putting up a Lechi. But the Rechava still remains problematic. The only way to solve the problem of the Rechava is to make it into an area that is Hukaf Lidira. So all you have to do now is open up one of the doors of the houses that abuts the Rechava, and then you'll have a Makom that's Hukaf Lidira. But as we already noted, if the walls are already up, and then you open the door, that doesn't help you with regards to Hukaf Lidira. So the solution we saw before was to knock down a little more than 10 amot of the wall, and replace it after you open up a Petach Lidira, in that area of the Rechava. Or have in mind now when you are fixing that area of the wall, that that's going to be for the utility of the people in the Mavoi and the Shvil HaKramim, which have Diorim, which have people that are living in it, and this will just be an extension of those areas, and now it'll be Hukaf Lidira, because you have them in mind when you're sealing it up at this point. Rashi says it was a stone wall that was very big or heavy or difficult to work with, and they didn't want to break down more than 10 amot of wall and then have to replace it. So now they're looking for a different solution. That's what Abaye is saying. So Abaye, hey Chinavid, what are we going to do over here in order to solve this problem? Lavid le mechitza aguda denaro. Let's make a mechitza that sits on the bank of the river. And when we put that mechitza up, remember that the Shvil HaKramim empties out or will go straight into the Rechava. And what we'll say is that this mechitza that we're putting up at the end of the Shvil Shel Kramim is also a mechitza for the Rechava itself. Now, as Tosafot points out, the area in front of the Nahar has to be greater than 10 amot, because if it was less than Eser, it would be like a petach, and all you have to do is stick up a lechi, and it would be fine in order to carry. The only reason you have to put up a full-fledged mechitza over here is because it's greater than 10 amot. And when you put it up, you're going to have in mind not only it be a mechitza for the Shvil HaKramim, but it'd also be a mechitza for the Rechava, because we're going to view the Rechava and the Shvil Shel Kramim as one entity. And it'll be as if you're now adding on a wall or mechitza to the Rechava that's of halachic significance. And now that you have in mind that either the individuals in the Mavoi and the Shvil will use it, or you're going to open up a doorway into the Rechava, and now it'll be Hukaf Lidira. So that's how you'll solve the problem. Eino si mechitza, gavi mechitza. The bank of the river is in itself already a mechitza. It's more than 10 tefachim of a drop, and in itself is a mechitza. To build a mechitza on top of another mechitza has no halachic significance. It's just basically raising the height of the existing mechitza. And that's not like you've done anything that has halachic significance. So rather, what should we do? La'avid le tzuret ha-petach apuma d'shvil shel kramim. Let us put a tzuret ha-petach on the entranceway of the shvil ha-kramim from the Rechava. So by putting up a tzuret ha-petach, now you've done something significant. You've added something, even though, again, there was a breach in the wall of Rechava into the Shvil HaKramim. But that breach wasn't problematic for the Rechava because it was less than 10 amot. Nevertheless, when you put up a Tzuret HaPetach over there, that has significance, according to Rashi, for the Shvil HaKramim itself. you will now be able to carry in the Shvila Kramim. Because until this point, the Shvila Kramim on one end was the river, which had a mechitza because the bank was so steep down that it was 10 tvachim high. So you have a mechitza on the riverside. On the other side, you have a Carmelite, which is the Rechava. That Surat HaPetach now will make it that you have on one end of the Shvila Kramim a Surat HaPetach. On the other end, you have a mechitza. That would then be matir, the Shvila Kramim, to have the people in the Shvila Kramim carry it, because according to Rashi, the Shvila Kramim is equivalent to a mavoi, because you have people living there in their houses and in chatzerot that open up into the Shvila Kramim. So now when I put on that Surat HaPetach, I've actually now solved the problem for the Shvila Kramim. Migo, that the Surat HaPetach is efficacious for the Shvila Kramim and has a halachic significance in the opening between the Shvila Kramim and the Rechava, it will also have then a halachic significance for the Rechava itself. And now that you're now being mekif the Rechava, the Dira, either because of the intent of the others to use the Rechava now, or because you opened up one of the buildings into that Rechava, that'll be hukaf le Dira. The Gemara says that that solution is no good, because atu gamle and shavinle, the camels are going to come along and drag it down. The problem is, as we noted before, that this is a thoroughfare for camels to get to the river. And now it's already, the Shvila Kramim is pretty narrow. And they were going through that narrow way out of the Rechava into the Shvila Kramim. Now they've put up a Surat HaPetach, you're going to narrow the doorway even more significantly. By narrowing the doorway even more significantly, you're going to cause problems for the camels to fit through. And as they go through there, they're going to bang up against the Surat HaPetach, or they're going to squeeze through the Surat HaPetach and cause it to be knocked down or ruined. And therefore, Surat HaPetach is not a good solution over here. Ella Amar Abaye Lavin Lechi Apitcha Deshvil Shel Kramim. Okay, so instead of using a Surat HaPetach over there, put up a Lechi. Because again, here, the Shvila Kramim, according to Rashi, is a Mavoi. A Mavoi, which is open on one side to a Carmelite, on the other side has a Mechitza. So you have three Mechitzot for the Shvila Kramim. And only one side opens up the Rechava. You can put up a Lechi on that side. Now, Lechi is not like a Surat HaPetach. A Surat HaPetach needs a frame that's going to shrink the width of that opening. A lechi is a koshul. You can put up the lechi without impacting on the width of that entranceway. Okay, now, migo, the mahanya, the shvil shvil kramim. Migo, that the lechi now is matir, the shvil shvil kramim, for the people inside the shvil shvil kramim to carry in that area, that mavui, then mahani nami the rechava. It will also help out the rechava, because it has a halachic significance for the shvil kramim. It will also then, migo, perforce, have a halachic significance for the rechava. And now that you are intending for it to be hukaf the dira, that will consider or classify as hukaf the dira. Amarle Rova, Rova says that solution is dangerous, because the Amru lechi mawil the shvil shel kramim dalma. Then people might come to the wrong conclusion and think that a shvil shel kramim can be solved with a lechi. And that is because, as Rashi tells us over here, most shvilei kramim are mifulash on both sides. They are open on both sides. One side goes to the Rishut Rabim and one side goes into a Carmelite, meaning that they're not closed on three sides like this situation where the water is locking up the third side. And people are too far away from the water to see that there's a mechitza of the water that drops down to make a mechitza on that side. And people are going to come to the incorrect conclusion that a lechi is a sufficient way to solve the problem of a shvil shel kramim. And yes, it's in our case, it's a solution because you have three mechitzot. You have the kramim on both sides, or walls on both sides, and then you have the river on the third side where the embankment is so steep that it creates a mechitza. So there you have three walls, three mechitzot. On the fourth side, all you need is a lechi into the Carmelite. But in a normal shvil shel kramim, where it's open on both ends, the lechi would not be sufficient. You would need a Surat HaPetach and a lechi. But the people outside can't see or don't have a clear visibility to the edge of the river to know that there's a steep embankment, that there's a mechitza there, and they're going to come to the wrong conclusion that a lechi is enough in those cases. The way to do this is lechi the pitcho de mato. We're going to put a lechi on the mavui side. On the other side of the Rechava is a mavui that leads out of the Rechava all the way to the Rishut Rabim. Well, then you have a mavui that opens on one end to the Rishut Rabim and on the other end into a Carmelite. You need to put a Surat HaPetach on one side and a lechi on the other side. So the assumption here is that there's already a Surat HaPetach on the end of the mavui by the Rishut Rabim. And now when you add a lechi on the side that is entering into the Rechava, that will now make it that the people in the Mavoi can carry in the Mavoi. Demigo de Mahani le Lechi the Mato, since the Lechi helps out the people in the Mavoi now to make it into a Mavoi that you can carry in, Mahani Nam the Rechava. Migo perforce, it also helps out the Rechava. That same doorway between them since there's a halachic significance to lechi for the mavoi, it will also have a halachic significance for the rechava. And now that you're putting it in with the intent that that rechava be the dira, now becomes hukaf le dira, it's no longer a karmelit, but rather an area that's hukaf le dira, which is mutar, even if it's above Beit Satayim. Now in both of these solutions, without the migo, it wouldn't have mattered, because the breaches, the openings between the rechava and the mavoi, or the rechava and the shvil shel kramim, are less than 10 amot wide. So as far as the rechava is concerned, it only has a petach, it's a doorway that doesn't ruin the mechitzot of the rechava. So in terms of halachic significance, putting something up there vis-a-vis the rechava has no halachic significance. It only can be halachically significant if the migo, that it helps the mavoi, or migo, that it helps the shvil shel kramim, that it's also then impactful on the rechava itself. And in that way, you're allowed now to carry in each of these areas. The mavoi now has a tzuret petach on one side and a lechi on the other side, and the people of the mavoi can carry there. The rechava you can carry in now, because the rechava is now hukaf the dira, because of the migo that the lechi helped the mavoi, it also helped the rechava now to become hukaf le dira. The shvil shel kramim also now you can carry in it, because now the shvil shel kramim has three michitzot. It has the two walls on the side, or the kramim on the sides, the river on the third side, so three sides with a wall, then it opens up into a rechava. Before, it was completely open into a karmelit, which is mufratz the karmelit, makes it problematic. But now that the rechava is no longer a karmelit, it's a place that's mutar to carry, it doesn't make it a sore for the people of the shvil akramim. And so, the people in the shvil akramim could also carry. But now the Gemara says, I understand, hilkach, tutule memata gufa shori, to carry things that are in the mavoi, that is mutar, because you have a lechi on one end, a tzuret petach on the other end. The rechava you can carry it now because it's mukaf l'dira at this point, and since it's mukaf l'dira, it can even be greater than a beit zadayim, and it's a karpef. That's your term, you gave beit zadayim, but mukaf l'dira, and therefore you can carry there. The shvil akramim you can also carry in because it has mechitzot on three sides. On the fourth side now, it's open into the rechava, but that's a doorway open to an area that is mutar, not into an area that now is a karmelit. And so no, it's not nifratz bikula into an area that is asur. It's nifratz mikula, it's an area that's mutar, where there are no diurim. And as we saw back on Zion, when you have a mavoi that empties out into a rechava, which is mutar to carry in and has no diurim, you don't need anything there to make it mutar. Even though there were diurim in the shvil shel kramim, they don't affect the rechava because of the gifufe, the two walls of the rechava that separate the chatser of the rechava from the shvil akramim. And the shvil shel kramim, as Rashi says over here, is like a chatser ktana that's nifratz the chatser gdola, where now it's like as if there's a petach between them. Those in the chatser gdola remain mutar, because they have a petach, which is fine, which closes them off in the ktana. So the rechava is independent of the shvil kramim. People in the ktana are surim, because they have a total breach on one side into an area that's a chatser gdola. So the people in the shvil, according to Rashi, will not be able to carry. And even though technically the shvil shel kramim should be mutar, Rashi maintains that the Gemara's statement before, that we don't want to be matar the shvil shel kramim, because people might mistakenly then extrapolate that to another shvil shel kramim and be matar it. Therefore, we say that the shvil shel kramim, or the people in the shvil shel kramim, cannot carry. The Rashba points out that he thinks that that's a mistaken assumption by Rashi, because that was only true when the lechi itself was being matar the shvil shel kramim. Over here, the lechi is over by the mavoi. It is matar the mavoi, which makes the rechava into an area that is mutar, and because the rechava is now an area that's mutar, the shvil shel kramim is also mutar. It's not the lechi directly being matar the shvil shel kramim. Therefore, people aren't going to make that extrapolation mistake, and it should be that the people in the shvil shel kramim should be mutar to carry around in there. What the Gemara wants to know is, what about carrying between those areas? So that tutule mato gufa shari, tutule rechava gufa shari, Mimata the rechava, or mi rechava the mato, what about carrying between the rechava and the mavoi, and the mavoi and the rechava? Pligi ba ravacha the ravina. They have a question about whether you can carry items from the mavoi into the rechava, or from the rechava into the mavoi. Chada sar v'chad shari. One says it's mutar, one says it's asur. Man the shari, the one who says it's mutar, daleka diurim. The rechava doesn't have anybody living in it, even though it's hukaf the dira because of the people in the shvil akramim, or because of the people in the mavoi, but nobody actually physically lives in the rechava. And since nobody lives there, it's not osera on the mavoi. The mavoi is only a sur when you have people who have multiple ownerships, meaning you have an ownership or a utilization by one group of individuals here, and in the other location. Over here, the rechava doesn't have any independent utilization, and therefore it does not affect the mavoi, and you can carry it back and forth between them without any problem. It's the equivalent of having a house that is uninhabited, that's in a chatzer. If there's another house in the chatzer, they don't need to do an Erev Chatzerot because the other house is uninhabited. They don't affect the individuals who actually live and utilize the chatzer. Umad Asar, the one who says it's Asur, Zim Davi Bad Diurin, Ba'atel Tutule. The problem is that sometimes people open up back doors into the Rechava. Right at this moment, there's nobody opened up or living in there. But at times, people could open up the Rechava, and they won't remember that now there's a change in the status. They've carried from the Mavoi into the Rechava, Rechava into the Mavoi until now. They'll continue to do that despite the fact now that they've opened up a doorway into that area. And that's why he makes it Asur, because of that eventuality or that problem that could arise. Tosafot does not love Rashi's explanation here for two main reasons. One of the reasons is that Rashi says that when it says Apuma deshvil shel kramim, and later on the Gemara says Apitcha deshvil shel kramim, Rashi says those are synonymous. And they're both talking about the dividing line between the shvil shel kramim and the rechava. If that's the case, why doesn't the Gemara use the same word, Apuma or Apitcha, in both instances? The fact that the Gemara changes the word seems to indicate that it's a different location. That's number one. Number two is, the Gemara only introduces the idea of the Migo once Abaye brings his third answer. The way that Rashi sets up the Gemara, the Migo is already important in the answer of Tzurat HaPetach of the Gemara, and that means that the Migo is already being invoked when the Gemara says, why don't you put up a Tzurat HaPetach, and the Gemara only introduces the idea of the Migo once Abaye gives the answer of Elechi. So how does Rashi introducing Migo even earlier than the Gemara introduces it? For those two reasons, Tosafot says that he thinks that Puma de Shvil Shel Kramim is different than Pitcha de Shvil Shel Kramim. Pitcha is like Rashi says, that's the dividing line between the Shvil Shel Kramim and the Rechava, the yard that's there. The Puma de Shvil Shel Kramim is the other side of the Shvil Shel Kramim that ends by the river. And Tosafot explains that the river does not have a steep embankment on the side of the Shvil Shel Kramim, but rather on the other side of the river. The river is less than 10 amot wide, and therefore the Shvil Kramim enters that area of the water, and then on the other side of the water, which is less than 10 amot to the other side, there's a steep embankment over there that becomes the Mechitza. That's number one thing that Tosafot says. Number two, Tosafot suggests that the Shvil Shel Kramim has nobody living in it. As opposed to Rashi, who makes the Shvil Shel Kramim like a Mavoi, he says that it's not a Mavoi, there's nobody living in the Shvil Shel Kramim. And now, the way that the Gemara plays out is that the Gemara says, Na'avid le mechitza aguda denaro. Why don't you make a mechitza on the embankment on the other side of the river? To that, the Gemara answers, Eino si mechitza, gabi mechitza. You can't have one mechitza on top of another mechitza, it doesn't do anything, it's not significant. So la'avid le tzurat ha-petach. Then why on the near side of the river do you not make a Tzurat HaPetach? At the end of the Shvil Shel Kramim, when it hits the water, before you cross over the water and then there's the embankment, why don't you put up a Tzurat HaPetach there? Now, you could have just put up a regular mechitza, it would have done the same thing. The reason they don't want to put up a regular mechitza is because the camels come to drink. And if you put up a regular mechitza, it's going to inhibit the camels from going to drink. So let's put up a Tzurat HaPetach there by the edge of the river. And since this Tzurat HaPetach now creates a mechitza for the Shvil HaKramim, so now that it has walls on three sides, because the two sides are blocked in, and now you're putting up a new Tzurat HaPetach over there, but that Tzurat HaPetach is directly opposite the area that enters between the Shvil HaKramim and the Rechava. And so now that Tzurat HaPetach is significant for the Shvil HaKramim, and since the Rechava has a opening that goes directly towards that Tzurat HaPetach, we can say now that he's putting up the Tzurat HaPetach as a mechitza at the end of the Shvil HaKramim, which also will be like a mechitza for the Rechava, and therefore now it will become mukaf for the Dira, because you already now have in mind that the Dayarim are going to utilize this, from the Mavoi are going to utilize this, or you're going to open up something from the back of the houses into the Rechava, and now putting this up adds on a significant halachic wall at the end of the Shvil HaKramim. And so now, since you are putting up something that is a real mechitza at the end of the Shvil HaKramim, that should be impactful on the Rechava as well. And you'll view the Shvil HaKramim as an extension of the Rechava. And since now it opens up into an area that's more than 10 amot wide, and you put up a Tzurat HaPetach, That's as if now you've created a wall for that little extension out of the Rechava, and you've now put up a significant halachic wall over there that's impactful on the Rechava. My answer is it's not going to work because the camels are going to have a hard time with that Surat HaPetach and drinking from the river. Then Amar Abaye put up a lechi on Pitcha Shvil Shel Kramim. On the other side of the Shvil Shel Kramim, you put up a lechi. Now, the reason Rashi was compelled to say that there were people who lived in the Shvil Shel Kramim is because a lechi is only a vehicle that helps you when you have a mavoi. A mavoi needs chatzerot and diurim and batim in it. Over here, Tosafot said the Shvil Kramim has nobody living in it. So putting up a lechi on the dividing line between the Shvil Shel Kramim and the Rechava, what does that do? For nothing for the Shvil Kramim. It doesn't do anything for the Rechava either. The Rechava already has a doorway there, and so it doesn't change anything. The Shvil Shel Kramim is not a mavoi, and a lechi is only a mechanism to be used by a mavoi. This is the difficulty in Tosafot's explanation, but Tosafot makes the suggestion that the lechi is meaningful for the people in the mavoi, because the people in the mavoi use this area. And since they use this area, they make it or can classify it as being like a mavoi, even though it is a Shvil HaKramim. So therefore, it has a status of a mavoi, even though it's not a mavoi, because the people from the mavoi used to use the Shvil Shel Kramim on weekdays or at other times, and therefore, it considers if it has a status of a mavoi, and therefore the lechi is significant. And there, the Gemara now invokes the migo that the lechi helps the Shvil Shel Kramim, so too, it helps out the Rechava. Rova says, wait a minute, people are going to get confused now, because they're not going to understand. The Shvil Shel Kramim has nobody living in it. And now you're putting up a lechi to make it mutar to carry there? That doesn't work when there's no mavoi. Our case is unique because the people from the mavoi on the other side of the Rechava utilize the Shvil Shel Kramim, so it makes it as if it is a mavoi. That's unusual. People are going to assume that any Shvil Shel Kramim, even when there's no utilization by a mavoi, it doesn't look like a mavoi, they can put up a lechi in order to make it that you can carry in that area. And that's just not correct. And that's what Tosafot says. According to Rashi, the confusion is going to be that they don't know about the mechitza on the other side of the Shvil Shel Kramim. They're taking their camels there all the time. What do you mean they don't know about it? So Tosafot says, no, the confusion here is that this is a unique type of Shvil Shel Kramim that's classified as a mavoi, and therefore a lechi works. And since a lechi works here, people are going to extrapolate that and say a lechi works in all Shvil Shel Kramim. And therefore, Rava says, you can't do that because people are going to extrapolate from here and do the wrong thing by other Shvil Shel Kramim. So Rava's solution is to put up a lechi on the side of the mavoi. So the mavoi, which has a Tzuret HaPetach facing the Shuter HaBim, now has a lechi on the side between it and the Rechava. That has a halachic significance. That halachic significance then is migo that it affects the mavoi, affects the Rechava. And now it's as if you have a mechitza that was put up, the shame diur. And by doing that, now everything becomes mutar. The Shvil Shel Kramim has nobody living in it to make it that it's a sur to carry there. And it has mechitzot in the back and across the river, and the two sides of the Kramim, mechitzot on three sides. The Rechava is now mutar to carry in, so it's no longer parutz into a Carmelite, which would make it problematic. The Rechava is mutar because it's now hukaf the dira. And the Mavoi is mutar because it has a lechi on one side and a Tzuret HaPetach on the other side. Then the Gemara asks, what about carrying between the Rechava and the Mavoi or the Mavoi and the Rechava? And the answer is, the one who thinks that it's mutar to do that is because there are no diurim here. According to Shita Tosfot, there are no diurim in the Shvil Shel Kramim. There's nobody lives in the Shvil Shel Kramim. And since nobody lives there, it's not a problem. The Rechava has nobody living there, and the Shvil Shel Kramim has nobody living there. And that's why you can carry back and forth between all of these areas. And that is the Shita of the Balei HaTosafot. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines down, on the top of Chaf Hei Amud Aleph.